Picture one of the world's most profitable companies sitting on a mountain of cash, $145 billion, and then borrowing $17 billion. Sounds absurd, right? Yet that's exactly what Apple did in 2013. Tim Cook didn't need the money. Apple could have funded stock buybacks from its enormous reserves, but bringing that overseas cash home meant paying taxes, so Cook borrowed instead, temporarily inflating share prices to satisfy activist investors like Carl Icahn. This wasn't just corporate strategy. It was a symptom of something deeply broken in American capitalism. We've entered an era where finance doesn't serve business. It dominates it. Wall Street thinking has infected every corner of our economy, transforming companies from makers into takers, from innovators into financial engineers. The question isn't whether this shift happened, it's how we got here and what it's costing us. Financialization, the growing dominance of financial motives, markets, and institutions, has fundamentally restructured American capitalism. Finance once converted household savings into business investment. Today, 85% of financial flows circulate within the financial system itself, enriching banks and hedge funds while starving the real economy of capital. The numbers tell a stark story. Finance has tripled its GDP share since World War II, now claiming roughly 20% of corporate profits, double its 1970s level. Banks' business-to-consumer loan ratio plummeted from 80% in the early 1980s to just 28% by 2005. The entire New York Stock Exchange now turns over every 19 months, triple the 1970s rate, as computerized trading treats shares like poker chips rather than ownership stakes. This shift made debt indispensable. As wages stagnated, credit became the solution for middle-class anxieties. Consumer borrowing exploded because maintaining living standards required it when paychecks stopped growing. Warren Buffett captured it perfectly. "We've created a body of people who've decided they'd rather go to the casino than the restaurant of productive capitalism." Despite having the world's largest financial sector, $81.7 trillion in assets, exceeding China, Japan, and Germany combined, America hasn't become more prosperous. Instead, financialization has delivered slower growth, deeper inequality, and devastating crises. Studies from the Bank for International Settlements, OECD, and IMF conclude that finance harms economic growth when it reaches half its current U.S. size. Oversized finance crowds out everything else. Brilliant graduates flock to Wall Street, where the average bonus hit $184,000 in 2020, nearly triple the median household income. The top 25 hedge fund managers collectively earn more than all 180,000 kindergarten teachers combined. When your brightest minds create complex derivatives rather than solve real problems, productivity suffers and innovation stalls. The resulting inequality tears at society's fabric. Countries with high inequality experience worse health outcomes, lower trust, more violent crime, and less social mobility. America's five largest banks now control half the commercial banking industry, spending over $2.5 billion per decade on lobbying to shape regulations in their favor. This isn't free market capitalism, it's crony capitalism, where insiders write the rules. GM's 2014 ignition switch crisis killed at least 124 people and cost nearly $1.5 billion in penalties. Financial managers consistently overruled experienced engineers, creating a system where quarterly metrics trump safety. Engineers designed ashtrays to function at minus 40 degrees, yet couldn't open at normal temperatures. People making airbags focused solely on airbags, those designing switches only on switches. No one thought holistically about component interactions or actual safety. This transactional thinking traces to early 20th century management philosophy. GM CEO Alfred P. Sloan Jr. declared his goal was to make money, not just to make motor cars, a stark departure from earlier industrialists. The 1919 Dodge v. Ford Motor Co. case gave this legal validation, ruling corporations exist primarily for the profit of the stockholders. Frederick Winslow Taylor's scientific management accelerated this shift, timing workers with stopwatches down to hundredths of a minute. This extreme specialization created bureaucratic layers, distancing executives from operations. Financial expertise trumped operational experience, with deadly consequences. When MIT professor Andrew Lowe's mother was diagnosed with lung cancer, he discovered something shocking. "Finance drives our research agenda," a biotech executive told him. Despite opportunities from the decoded human genome, early-stage biotech R&D investment was decreasing. Major pharmaceutical companies like Pfizer, sitting on over $30 billion in cash, focused on acquisitions and financial engineering rather than developing new drugs, following Wall Street's advice to exit research and create value through shareholder returns. Business education wasn't always this way. Early schools like Wharton emphasized industry expertise and ethics. The Great Depression changed everything. By the 1950s, business schools shifted to data-driven operations research, partly funded by conservative elites determined to prove American-style business superior to communism. The Chicago School's gospel became, "A corporation's sole purpose is maximizing financial value, paired with the efficient market hypothesis, the idea that share prices perfectly reflect all information." An Aspen Institute survey found MBA students' values shift from stakeholder-focused to shareholder-focused by second semester. Despite the 2008 crisis, MBA programs remain wildly popular. Yet American business health has declined. Falling R&D spending, reduced entrepreneurship, stagnating productivity, plummeting public trust. We're producing more business graduates than ever, while business itself withers. Carl Icahn's 2015 Apple campaign extracted over $200 billion in dividends and buybacks, netting him $237 million in a single day. Modern activists like Bill Ackman, Daniel Loeb, and Nelson Peltz target companies demanding board seats and payouts through financial engineering rather than value creation. The transformation crystallized in 1982. The Supreme Court struck down a key anti-takeover law, the Justice Department relaxed concentration limits, and the SEC dramatically loosened buyback regulations. SEC Chairman John Shadd, a former Wall Street executive, championed this despite warnings it legalized market manipulation. Between 2005 and 2015, S&P 500 companies spent $4 trillion on buybacks and $2.5 trillion on dividends, 90% of net earnings. By 2014, payouts exceeded 100% of earnings. IBM, McDonald's, and Pfizer spent more on buybacks than on R&D and capital expenditures combined. Executives profit directly. With 66 to 82% of compensation in stock, buybacks inflate prices and trigger bonuses. Family-owned firms like Mars, Bechtel, and Cargill invest twice as much in R&D, training, and equipment, demonstrating how private ownership enables sustained innovation. Market capitalism isn't divinely ordained. It's a set of rules we created and can remake. Five fundamental reforms could transform our dysfunctional system into one serving shared prosperity. First, simplify and illuminate finance. Our $81.7 trillion system has become too complex to manage. Even sophisticated risk managers can't track millions of daily transactions. We need mandatory trading of derivatives on regulated exchanges, comprehensive shadow banking regulation, elimination of offshore havens, and financial transaction taxes discouraging excessive speculation. Second, end our debt addiction. When private sector credit expansion exceeds GDP growth by 3 to 5% annually, crises inevitably follow. Yet our tax system subsidizes debt through interest deductibility while penalizing equity. Third, reject shareholder primacy. Short-term activists prioritize quick stock appreciation over company viability, creating a vicious cycle where businesses avoid productive investment. Solutions include strict buyback limits, graduated capital gains taxes rewarding longer holding periods, and restrictions on stock option compensation. Fourth, pursue a new growth model. Financialization both causes and results from slower real growth. America needs an ambitious moonshot goal, clean energy independence, breakthrough medical technologies that could unite the country and drive sustainable innovation. Finally, empower makers over takers. We need markets with genuine equal access, a political economy not captured by moneyed interests, and a financial sector serving business rather than itself. When banks fund entrepreneurs and capital flows to productive uses, everyone prospers.